Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Swim podcast.
All right, how's it going? Welcome to Swim Podcast, episode number 15. I'm Daniel P. Carter, and my guest on Someone Who Isn't Me this week is Ben Weinman of the Dillinger Escape Plan, Giraffe Tongue Orchestra, and Party Smasher, Inc. I know previously that I said at the end of the last episode that it was going to be an interview that I did with Marilyn Manson a little while ago to celebrate the anniversary of Antichrist Superstar, but I feel like that window's kind of done now. The anniversary was about a month ago now, and also I was in Tokyo recently and I hung out with Manson and we started talking a little bit about his new album, which is coming out at the start of next year, called Satan. And as he's put like a video online now, and it's the first taste of that new music, I feel like maybe looking back was probably not the way to go for the podcast, because I definitely want to do a podcast with him, but I'd rather do one about the new album so it's more up to date and current. And I know that a lot of people were excited about the Manson one. I apologize. Also, I'd said that I was going to run the interview that I did with Geordie in conjunction with that, and that seems kind of a pointless exercise as well if I'm going to redo another one. So hopefully I'll get to do an interview with Geordie at another point as well, because I saw him briefly in Tokyo, really briefly. In fact, it was midway through the Marilyn Manson set when they were playing at Knotfest Japan. So yeah, it was super brief. He was like, oh, what's up? I didn't know you were coming. Cool. So hopefully I'll get to do a new interview with him at some point, but also the Manson one is going to happen, I guess, as soon as I get out to LA next, I suppose. So anyway, that aside, don't cry, dear friends, because the one with Ben is wicked. We talk about the new Dillinger Escape Plan album, Dissociation, and about, well, more about the actual announcement that was made before the album came out, which was that this was going to be the band's last album and that they were going to break up. So I just sat down and we had a conversation about how he feels about that and what that might mean and how that affected the writing amongst the band, and also a little bit about Giraffe Tongue Orchestra, a little bit about Party Smasher, which is this multi sort of venture thing that he's doing, and also a little bit about his foray into the world of management, where he's managing an artist called Kimbra, who's awesome. So yeah, Swim Podcast, episode number 15, Ben Weinman. Check it out.
We've said about doing this for a while, and every time we talk in another capacity, like if I talk to you from work, we'll speak for like 10 minutes about what is the thing, and then we talk for like however long anyway, talking about all the other shenanigans. So it feels weird to now try and do something that is in between those two things. You know what I'm saying?
Totally.
So we should use the album as the kickoff point.
And then we can shoot off.
You know, I haven't lived with it. And as you said before we started, it's not one of the... you're not that band where you can just go...
Yeah. Totally. Yeah.
And that's something I find interesting, like, because the amount of times where I've said to you about like the kind of Mars Attacks bits, and I hope you don't think that I'm taking the piss, because do you know what I mean? Like, I find it weird, like hard to comprehend the balance between the kind of mathematical sort of cerebral side of the music you make, and finding that balance to then balance it out with the visceral, emotional side of it.
Yeah,
and I think you do it every time.
That's a good question. I feel like what differentiates us, or I hope, from other technical bands is that.
Yeah, but you know, yeah, so. Of course. But aside from the fact that you were there before those bands, I mean, that's always going to be a huge factor in that as well. But that's the other thing, is that it's not, there's emotional weight to it.
Mm.
And striking that balance must be difficult.
God, you know, it's not difficult, honestly.
Okay.
We never, I think we start off from a point of like, the ideas we're working on, or I'm working on, or I'm in the basement with our drummer jamming on, start from emotional part. You know, they start from energy and summoning some kind of old punk vibe or metal thing that really meant something to me when music was the soundtrack of my life when I was a young person, and going for a vibe or going for some kind of energy that I need, and then pushing it farther and farther and farther and farther and farther. And so it starts out from a feeling, and then as we get, as writers desensitized to it, we continue to write and write. So like, we're often working on the first song we started working on at the same time that we're working on the last song that we end up doing for the album. So like, these songs just continue to evolve and evolve and evolve. So some of the stuff that's like almost incomprehensibly complex rhythmically or whatever started out reasonably complex, you know, and then because it became second nature to us and not really uncomfortable anymore, we kept pushing it throughout this writing cycle. But it always started from a place of, we could see ourselves playing this live. It has emotion, it has energy.
Well, it's interesting as well, because then it makes me think about, if you're start, it's like anything, it's like making a painting, I guess. It's like, when do you know that you're done? When is it finished? Especially when you like on this record, like on all the records, but the way it jumps, because it's like, I look at your band in the sense that it's like, and this might be overthinking it a bit, but you know, it's like a musical equivalent of like a, like Burroughs cut up in a way. Do you know what I'm saying? Because it feels like it, the things that would normally be so jarring, the way it will jump between actual moods and forms of music, that would be like jarring in a way that would make it, that would just sound, I don't mean it sounds
contrived,
like
or
yeah, it doesn't like, I don't mean it sound like it's cobbled together. What I actually mean is like, the way Cup was done, that it actually became its own thing because it was so jarring,
right?
You know what I'm saying?
Combination of the jarring,
it's so artful.
Thank you. I mean, that was the goal of the band from the beginning.
Yeah.
We started the band, I had already been completely desensitized to metal and punk by the time I started Dillinger.
Yeah.
I'd listened to every single underground death metal album I could order online, or not online at the time, through catalogs and, you know, things like that. I had listened to all the three-chord punk stuff that was exciting after that, because it had more energy, it was more visceral, or it had some kind of message. And then by the time Dillinger had started, new metal had become the big thing, like Limp Bizkit and Korn and all that stuff. So there was music that was fairly heavy and some screaming and all that stuff in the mainstream already. And I was, not only was I kind of desensitized by extremely fast double bass and blast beats, you know, like that was not jarring anymore to me. But I was only listening to still like very underground fusion and electronic music, IDM music, and you know, Mahavishnu Orchestra and Thelonious Monk and stuff like that. So I had this background of metal and punk, which I liked the environment that it came from. I liked that it was what jazz was when jazz started. You know, it was stuff your parents didn't like. You know, it was confrontational. It was jarring. It was uncomfortable. It pushed limits. So I liked what metal and all that stuff came from, but I was listening to much different music than was going on. So Dillinger was a way for us to make the music that encompassed all those things that we loved. And instead of creating a band that had different styles that were put together, like some of the bands we had that were starting to do that kind of innovative stuff at the time, where it'd be like, here's a rap part, here's a metal part, here's a jazz part, here's a whatever. We wanted to take all our instruments, put it into a blender, and make a new sound out of it. So we weren't going to be like, here's the Latin part. We'd be like, no, let's play our version of a grindcore Latin rhythm. You know what I mean? Like, how are we going to make this Latin rhythm that we think is really interesting super pummeling? You know, how are we going to do that?
Yeah.
How are we going to take these jazz chords and, like, scales and make them freaking so punk? you know, and in your face. Like, how are we going to do that? Like, that's what we wanted to do.
Yeah, because they're the antithesis of each other, especially, like, I mean, not ideologically, I guess. I mean, punk and a lot of jazz has a lot in common with each other, I think.
Yeah.
But, yeah, sonically.
Right.
Like, the whole idea of just anyone can pick up this and do this. And at the same time, you've got these guys that are so advanced in their playing that they're pushing out into the realms of stuff that it seems, on first listen to a lot of people, totally unmusical.
Right.
Which is, I guess, the point where they meet with a lot of punk stuff.
Yeah. And much like a lot of the metal bands, they end up becoming kind of formulaic and things like that and going into a more commercial realm because they want to actually make some money and stuff like that. And a lot of those jazz guys ended up going into like smooth jazz and commercialized stuff on, you know, and basically elevator music from being really innovative bebop players, you know.
Yeah.
We didn't want to do that. We could have very easily just made a nu metal record and signed to a major and there you go. I mean, it's not like we didn't have that ability. We were in like the New York area and we had the ability to make those albums. All those bands were praising us at the time.
Yeah.
You know, these bands that were very big doing kind of more of the nu metal type of stuff were getting into Dillinger, and that was kind of how we started to make it. It's because all these big bands, System of Downs and Papa Roaches and all these stuff, were talking about us in interviews, and that was like really interesting and weird because I didn't know what those bands sounded like.
Yeah.
I didn't know what I'd never heard System of a Down when they asked us to go on tour. Yeah. Obviously, they became very versed in it on tour.
Yeah.
You know, songs became like, couldn't stop hearing them, you know, I became a fan afterwards. But I was so against anything mainstream. I didn't know anything that was going on in the mainstream world at all, you know.
Because you're saying about the jazz thing as well, because I think that's something that really comes through on this record a lot more than, not that it hasn't before, but it just seems a lot more, not obvious, because I don't mean it sound like that, but you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
like
yeah.
The jazz feeling in like, sorry, let me, yeah, definitely. There was like in
that song, like in that song. With the stuff, with the noise and the beats.
Yeah, because I, you know.
Yeah, no, there is one song particularly I know you're talking about where we go into this really like obvious fusion part and stuff like that. I don't know the names of our songs yet, so.
Yes, you do. Surrogate.
Oh, right.
You know?
Yeah.
Like that has, you know, and that's, it just blows my mind that it's always these bits that are almost like Aphex and Ortega, but like played as in such an aggressive but metal way, which is funny because I think a lot of those dudes probably grew up on metal and then kind of thought that it was formulaic as well, but then the way forward that they would push those influences would be through like glitching electronica and stuff. And I think it's funny that you've run in a very much the same parallel
trajectory, yeah.
Yeah, but done it through actual playing.
Yeah, I mean, I was just listening to all these kind of like Aphex Twin and Square Pusher and Mission Snares, all that stuff, while writing Calculating Infinity and stuff like that. So those kind of things that seemed almost random, those kind of rhythms and things that sounded almost random, but made some kind of a sense to at least the person that was creating it, was a huge influence on that album, you know, and the style that ended up being kind of like the Dillinger vocabulary.
Yeah. And you said that this record was a bit more going back to that stuff as well.
Well,
I don't know, when I first, like when you said that to me a long time ago, like when we were speaking before I'd heard the record, you were like, yeah, it's more punk and it feels a lot more like that first record. And I was like, so that was my sort of what I had as a preconception when I listened to it. And I see what you're saying, but I guess that's because you've come at it sort of from that mindset maybe. And
yeah.
But it hasn't come off sounding like that.
Yeah, well, it's funny. Yeah, I realize that now, like when I've said stuff like that, because other people are listening to it in a different way than I am. So I feel like more like the approach and the headspace was similar, but not necessarily the songs, you know. So, for instance, like our first album, Calculating Infinity, was created in a very difficult personal time. Our guitar player that was in the band left. Our bass player was in a horrible accident, leaving him paralyzed.
Yeah.
There was all kinds of pressure within at least our small subculture to produce something, you know, challenging and incredible, because our EPs that we put out previously were really like critically acclaimed in that world. And so like a lot of people were like, how is this going to work on a full album? Can they spread this over many, you know, what's this going to be like? Is it going to push the boundaries? Are they going to sell out? Whatever, you know?
Yeah.
So there's a lot of pressure, and we had very little resources to make the album. We did it in any way we could. Some of it was done on like weird samplers and things like that that were like at that time pretty like analog and stuff like that. There was like USB, you know, and some of it was done in the studio. It was all mostly all done to tape. There was no computers. There's no cutting and pasting or moving or anything like that.
Yeah.
We had only about 2 weeks to do it and a few grand to get a whole thing done. We did some at like home studios. We just ran into someone's house and did like a solo, put it onto like ADAT tape, and then had to to like transfer that to a tape machine and blend it. It was really kind of a mess, you know, but we made it happen and we stepped up and we figured it out. And there was a lot of complications this time. Personally, we were in a really weird place when we were making this album. We recorded it in about five different studios with like five different people having their hands on it, which was completely different to all the albums in between Calculator.
How so? Why was that?
What was different about it?
No,
or
why
did we do it differently?
Do that way?
Part of it was intentional. Part of it was we had no choice. Things just didn't line up, timing and things like that. Hmm. And also, this was also a time of like emotional maturity and maturity and trust in ourselves that like it's not about anybody else's schedules anymore. Like this is our band. Hmm. And not that like they're lucky to work with us, but it's like, you know, it's been very hard for us as completely independent people and band, as a band and individuals, to have to like work in other people's schedules or in their way. And so making the albums have always been the time when that's most relevant, because we're typically on someone else's label. We're working in someone else's studio with their schedule when they were available and the time frame they had. Like, so this time I particularly was kind of like really needed to become, I think really we all going into this record became independent individually and then went into the album going in together, feeling confident in ourselves individually. So like I was like, look, oh, you're not available to do this now? You went over with your last band? Cool, I'm gonna do it. Just went into a studio nearby and just did it. Started recording. You know, and oh, you only have this amount of time to do this and Greg's not ready and your time's up. Okay, we'll just go with somebody else. Like we had confidence in ourselves.
Yeah.
And
well,
so,
yeah, I think, yeah, rightly so at this point, man.
Yeah.
And you seem to have been, I mean, you've driven this band since day one anyway, and having had previous conversations with you about the way you write and demo to a certain level anyway.
Mm. Yeah, no, I mean, our demos are, like, you know, considered, are probably, like, as well produced as some people's albums, you know.
Yeah.
Because we really want to know, I really want to sit in my car and hear that stuff and like feel it and see how it's coming off before even going to that next step.
Hmm. When do you know that you're done with stuff? Because like I imagine, I don't know, like in any kind of music or any kind of art, you're always constantly second guessing everything, aren't you? Especially when you get really close to it.
Yeah. Well, this one was actually interesting because I wasn't second guessing it, but everybody else was.
Okay.
Like this one particularly.
Was that prior to the whole, this is going to be our last album?
I started the majority of working on this before that decision had been made. But like Liam, our bass player, and Greg didn't get the music until after that decision was made.
Hmm.
So that was an interesting. But no, I
do you think that would that changed the way that they looked at it and worked on it with that in? Because you know, if we're you know, talking straight, like we've had conversations before, and the whole thing about, you know, we can't do this forever.
Yeah.
You know, there's a physicality involved, especially when it comes to playing it live.
Yeah.
Do you think that like when you said that, for a start, I don't want this to turn into that conversation too much, but do you think that changed the way that they approached it?
I think Liam just always tries to up himself, like personally, on his skill level and his ability. I think he's always challenging himself to go in the studio more prepared than the last time.
Hmm.
You know, having to do less takes than he had to do the time before, impressing our producer more than he did the time before. He's very like technique-wise. He's very conscious about working on technique and things like that, and being prepared. Every single time he's working on more, being prepared more and more and more, practicing to the songs, playing to the songs. You know, I go into it full, just artistically. Like, I don't even care if I can play it. I just want to make sure it feels good. It feels right.
Yeah.
I'll figure that out later. And then Greg hears typically the album almost completely finished.
Yeah.
And then it has so to react to it.
Yeah, he's writing lyrics as a reaction to
Right, as a reaction to this stuff that's, like, pummeling, you know, in a lot of ways. So all those things play a factor. I don't know. I assume that the knowledge of this being kind of the last did affect his writing on it, you know. It must have. Had to have.
Yeah, because it's overall, it's. I mean, not that everything was, like, you know, a beautiful sunny day anyway.
Yeah.
But do you know what I mean? It's a really dark record.
Yeah,
lyrically
it is,
and
yeah.
sonically. So I guess, I mean, if you're reacting to something on a gut level, when somebody hands you a piece of music and goes, go and do your job on this bit now. Like, it's going to be, of course, that's going to set the tone. You're not going to write in a certain manner if the music is dictating another vibe anyway.
I think but the most interesting thing about our band is that I think all bands have the most difficult relationship issues ever.
Yeah.
Internally, externally. I mean, you're in a situation, when you're an active, live, busy working band that does it full time like us, and we've done it a really long time full time, you're basically in a scenario where your personal relationships and home life is in shambles. Like, it's impossible to set up a solid base at home.
Yeah.
You know, our relationships at home, our lives at home, even as simple as you come home to a stack of bills that are now 100 months late and you probably have to show up in court for something you don't even understand. You know what I mean? Like, everything is just out of whack when you're a touring musician like we are.
Yeah.
And you don't have, like, business managers paying your bills and all the crap that, like, these massive major label artists have, where they're just pulled around by their dicks, you know, like, told what to do, and they come home and there's someone cooking for them. Like, we literally are regularly working musicians who don't come home every night after work, you know? And so we have this scenario where our home lives are never, like, nurtured in the way that they to be healthy. And then here we are in a relationship with people who all have very different lives, and where every decision we make individually affects the other person so drastically. So it's a highly anxious scenario to be in. And I, for one, I mean, this is the kind of the climax of that, because I needed to be in a place where I knew I could live without this man, you know, to be healthy.
Yeah.
I needed to be able to say, it's okay if it doesn't exist. I'm more than just this man. And it's okay if somebody in the band doesn't want to do this, or does something else, or does something annoying, or doesn't, you know, get something done in the time we need. It doesn't matter. You know, it doesn't matter. My life exists. Life goes on.
Yeah.
So I had to be able to create a life outside of that to be able to feel that. So this album was both going into that with that idea that, like, all right, we're doing this because we want to do it. We know there's an end to it. We can play as many shows as we want, but, like, this is it. And it gives it meaning. It gives this whole thing meaning. Everything. The music, the shows, everything has meaning, because we know this isn't the same cycle over and over again, over and over again, where we're just, like, struggling to deliver this art that we are really proud of in a really difficult personal scenario. So, and then on top of that, like, I think lyrically it's very interesting, and musically it's very interesting, because musically, the music was started in a place where I felt very controlled by Greg's actions, because all I had was this band. Like, my personal life had fell apart completely.
Yeah.
And Greg has felt that way about me too. But then here I am telling Greg, I'm done. Go make a record. So he had to be very reactive to that, I'm assuming, because initially he didn't want it to be the case, you know?
Yeah.
And I was like, I just think this is the way to do it. This is the smart, powerful, bold way to do this. We got to do this right. We got to do it on our terms. We can't let someone else decide this for us. So I think, you know, I was creating music under this scenario where I felt kind of trapped by this band, which creates a certain kind of anxiety in the music and certain situation.
Yeah.
He was writing lyrics feeling like someone just took away from him, you know, like all he had, really, you know. And he hadn't now learned to get into the same headspace that I was at. You know, he had no choice. And he has. I think he realizes, like, this is a really powerful way to go out.
Yeah.
But, yeah, there was definitely some of that affecting the album.
Yeah, I think you can hear that, definitely. When did you decide that was what this was going to be? Like, what was there, like, a thing where you were like, fuck it, this is it, I'm...
Yeah, I mean, I definitely... We had played Mexico City, and I taken 2 days after that to go sit on a beach somewhere, and I'd never done that in years. Like, I didn't, you know, not been in a band scenario and actually travel and did some, like, sat somewhere on a beach, you know. It was crazy, you know. I was just like, I was thinking to myself, you know, this isn't healthy to be so reliant on other people for my happiness and my, you know, my business, my, you know, my financial situation, my art. I love the music we do. I love the shows. Everything's super real about them, but everything around it just kind of sucks. It's the same thing for 20 years, basically.
Yeah.
It never changes. Like, I just do this cycle over and over and over. I get home from tour and everyone's working and hanging out with their families, and I'm like, anybody want to go get lunch? No, I work, bro. You know, like,
yeah.
And then you got to go do it again and you're gone, you know, and whatever you've built over the few months or years that you're working on this album now just falls apart because you're gone.
Yeah.
So I was like, I don't want that to be the case anymore. It's boring. It's fucking boring. So how do I change that? And it just hit me. I got to change what I do. I got to put myself back in an uncomfortable scenario to let new things happen. So it just came to me. I was like, this should end.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Like, I don't feel like it's ending. There's no reason for it to end. The shows aren't getting smaller. The music isn't, you know, the music still feels real and important.
Yeah.
Everything, we perform at a highest level, at a super high level right now. So let's stop.
Yeah, and that's a very powerful thing to do. And yeah. It's got to be pretty liberating as well.
It is, and it's really interesting to, well, knowing that and then finally having it come out, like, in an interview.
Yeah.
When it was out in the public, it was freaky. It was super freaky. That was, like, it was real when it was out. You know?
Yeah, because this has been real. Your life, hasn't it?
Yeah, super real.
Do you think, like, doing the GTO thing has had any way, like, influenced that in the sense that you've gone, well, hang on a minute, I can make music and I can still be creative and feel fulfilled without the, like, not the constraints, but within the
right,
this band? Do you think that's had something to do with it, or is that just is that just another thing as well?
No. Definitely, I think if anything, it just reminded me that all bands are difficult. You know,
yeah,
like, logistically, everything. Like, you know, yeah, there's no easy way to be in a band with a bunch of people, and yeah, it almost made me feel more understanding of Dillinger. You know, maybe really analyze Dillinger in a new way to be in another band with another group of people.
Especially when they're all obviously in the same situation where they're all in other bands.
Yeah. I mean, we've all been in scenarios where in our bands that have been difficult or challenging, and we're all seasoned musicians who play for a living, and it's not a super group to me. It's a bunch of dudes who are experienced, you know, that I happen to be around often. So
yeah, I think that super group gets bandied around. And it's such a weird thing, because then it automatically sets those parameters up. Do you know what I mean? Everyone's an expectations.
Yeah.
But it's funny, isn't it? Because people kind of forget that if you're playing in at a certain level, and, you know, without blowing smoke up your ass, you know, look at how respected you and your band is, right? Because you've got people, not just other musicians wanting to work with you, but people like Patton, people like Trent Reznor, that are total innovators as well, and have recognized that within you and this band. So therefore, it's like, well, as soon as you're moving in those circles, you're hanging out with other people, and you go, oh yeah, let's do something else. Of course it's going to end up that they're going to be dudes that are of similar standing,
right?
You know, you know what
of
I mean?
Course. And that's something I don't think people realize, that there's a reality to...
It's almost like people expect you to have sat there,
like
with
who's
a piece
my
of paper.
Ultimate group, and
a
baseball, like you know,
yeah,
fantasy baseball league or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, like, literally, me and Brent have been friends for 16 years.
Yeah.
And we've always wanted to play together, and we've just had to find the time. And then he had a couple guys he liked to play with. I had a couple guys I liked to play with. We all got in a room. Some of it didn't work out. Mm. We got some new guys. We jammed or whatever. The music was, maybe it is, maybe it isn't. And then finally, the great group of people got in our room, and it worked. It wasn't the initial people that we thought we'd work with. It wasn't the people that necessarily, if we had our super group, we'd pick. It was just the right people opened up, worked out. Brent ran into William in the supermarket. You know what I mean? He asked, "How's that project you're doing?" That you know, and he's like, "Oh, it's pretty cool. We don't really have a singer. You want to do it?" And he's like, "Oh, let me hear that. Oh, well, that's cool. I have ideas." You know, Pete is someone that like a lot of people don't know him on bass, but he's one of the best bass players I've ever heard. You know, and he was never in some massive band or like it was just right. He was right for the project. You know, and then Brent and Thomas had always talked about jamming together. So he's like, "Thomas, come over. You're in L.A. We're recording in California. Come to the studio." And it worked. It happened, you know.
What do you see happening with that, like, as far as touring and stuff goes? Because you're doing the show at Reading and Leeds, which I'm stoked about.
Yeah, that's really scary. It's fun. I'd like to keep doing it and make new music. And it's not like a replacement for Dillinger. It's not like Dillinger's ending, so that can become my band, you know?
No, I get that. That's not what I was getting at. But I just kind of look at it that, this is a great record. It doesn't have to just be one, does it?
Yeah. No, I think we all were really happy with how it came out. Yeah. That it doesn't just sound like something you do in the time you have off. Yeah. We spent a lot of time on this and a long time on this album. And we didn't put it out. We have tons of songs. We didn't put it out till it felt like a real piece of work on its own.
Yeah.
And something that we felt was a sound that encompassed all of us and made sense. So, we should most definitely will probably be continuing to make music and play some more shows and see where it leads us.
Yeah, because I think that's the other thing is that it's like as soon as you kind of put a statement out there that a band that you've started and run and pushed forward, it's not saying that I'm retiring from music.
Yeah. I might.
You think?
I might disappear. I might go disappear.
Yeah, but that's not like, you're not going to stop making music.
No. I'll be making music in some shed somewhere.
Yeah. But would you be satisfied doing that, do you think?
Yeah.
Would you?
I don't know. I don't know. That's the biggest mystery. You know, I'm a Leo. You know, I'm used to a certain amount of attention and like, you know, extroversion and like, you know, yeah. No, but I'm also someone who's very conscious of being humble and being grounded and centered.
Yeah.
Ego is a very interesting thing to me. Mm. And I dance with it frequently. Mm. And I'm aware of it and conscious of it and interested by it. And I think you're in a similar situation where you're somebody who has a certain amount of notoriety and like visibility with people. But you're also a real artist who cares about making art, and you're interested in real art, and you're interested in when you make something. I know you. When you make something, you're stoked when you just make it and look at it, not by necessarily what someone thinks of it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You're like, however, your money, your existence, everything relies on people digging what you do to some degree.
Yeah.
So it's data, it's information. So you need people to kind of like, Daniel Carter, bow, bow, in order for you to keep really doing this in a way.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a tough scenario. One thing that real artists have, that non-real artists have, is the understanding that it's a high responsibility to create something for the right reasons.
Yeah.
Because you're a parent to what you're putting out there. And if you don't do it for the right reasons, it's going to be an asshole. You know what I mean? And it's not going to be good. It's not going to do any good for the world if you don't raise it right and you don't do it for the right reasons.
Yeah.
So if you're not doing it out of love, it's just going to be a mess. It's not going to be right.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Whatever.
Yeah.
It's for the wrong reasons. It's out there for the wrong reasons. And so that's will always overpower ego. Like, you know, the thing you love being more important than even yourself.
Yeah.
And it's only people who know that will ever understand what it's like to like kind of have something more important than your ego. You know what I mean? Because it's not a thing about like, it's not like an insult to people. It's like everyone has ego. You can't get rid of it. It doesn't go away. Even if you're a kind person, you do charity, all those things, your ego is still there. You're still facing it, you know, and whether it takes charge of you or not, that's another story, but it's there.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm sure you know what it's like to see your kid walk towards the street near a car, and without thinking, without even breathing, you jump and grab him, and if you got hit, you got hit. Right?
Yeah.
That's the only time you lose your ego, ever. Ever. Yeah. And a lot of people don't know what that's like. So I like to try to know what that's like with my art and with my loved ones and things like that. And so will I continue to want to have that feeling? Yeah. Do I need it to be in front of people? Do I need to be in front of a crowd? Do I need critics? Do I need people on a message board talking about me? I will admit it will be hard to just be Ben and not Ben Dillinger. And I don't know how hard that'll be, but I'm going to find out.
We've spoken enough that I know how smart you are on a business level, and how you have all these ideas for things outside of the band as well. So that's, you know, that's a whole world of opportunity where you'll be able to focus effort and direct towards that, I think, which will be a beautiful thing. But then also, like I said, you know, you've got people like, you know, you've worked with Mike Patton, you've worked with Trent Reznor. Wow.
Hung out with these people at the very least.
I got some ideas about your new album. Yeah, you know, I think you're in a great position because you've established yourself. I think all of you have. I don't mean this to just speaking to you, but I mean, you know, as a group of people, you've all.
Well, that's also part of why I think it's a good idea to close the door right now, because we, I think, are in a respected position, and I think it's a respectable thing to do. So
yeah, better to go out being that band where everyone's like, "Fuck yeah!" than
right, absolutely,
yeah,
absolutely,
yeah. I think it's pretty heroic, actually.
Thank you, sir.
To
I agree. Honestly, it's not easy. It's not an easy thing to do.
Yeah, it's not at all. But also,
I don't know about heroic, but it's
I think it is, it's to a bold degree. Move. Yeah, you know,
it's a brave. Anybody I'll say that
that's
because
prepared
it's,
to like take something that they've known.
Yeah,
and not taking it for granted, but this is, you know, this is what I'm known for. This is what I do. This is how I pay my bills, or attempt to pay my bills, regardless. Yeah. You know,
sure.
I don't know the situation, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
To then go, okay, well,
boom, goodbye.
Yeah,
yeah. It's very difficult. It's freaky. Completely free. Every like I say, I keep saying to people, like, 99% of the people in my phone book know me from Dillinger.
Yeah.
Like,
well, of
so,
course,
you know,
because that's, I mean, that's how you traveled the world.
Right. So I'm at the point now where my identity is heavily entwined with Dillinger Escape Plan. So to remove that is very, very...
I think
interesting
that's...
Interesting
scenario. Yeah, but I think that that's also from a perspective of, like, people that don't know you will be like, oh, Ben from Dillinger. Whereas I think everyone that is a friend, you know, I don't go... I'm going to call Ben from Dylan. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah.
Right?
Well, hopefully, yeah. Well, I guess we'll see who's...
About Ben.
We'll find out. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting, man. Cool. Have you, like... I mean, have you had, like, a sit-down discussion with everyone about it? The band themselves?
About ending?
Yeah. Well, or is it just, like, everyone's kind of... It's, do you know what I mean?
Like,
because
discuss
it is,
what's going on next, or discuss, like, the sit down of, like, deciding this.
No, like, just like, just a general, because, you know, that whole thing about, oh, being in a band is like a marriage, and,
right,
and it is
like what
our
relationship will be post.
Yeah.
No, I mean, I think there's two interesting things about this. This may be the only opportunity for us to truly be real friends, because like we have no agenda with each other. There's no agenda. Like, we can truly just be interested in each other's lives without thinking, like, how's this thing this person is doing or isn't doing going to affect my livelihood, you know?
Yeah.
And so that's a really cool idea, the fact that...
How much of that has existed in the past, then?
It's unavoidable.
Yeah,
you know?
Of course.
It's unavoidable.
Like,
like I said, when your whole existence relies on this thing that four or five people control by their actions or decisions, it's really scary.
Yeah.
And so that will be gone, the whole scenario. But then ultimately also, we may never talk again. There'll be no reason.
Yeah.
So
it's funny,
we'll
isn't
see.
It? Because like,
we'll see.
Yeah. Because having been in a situation where I played in a band for a long time, not as long as you have, but, yeah, and then I always thought, like, oh, I, you know, I'm so close to these guys, and I'm in constant close proximity, and touring is such an insular little world where you're just in each other's company all the time. Yeah, there are times where everybody drives each other crazy, but I was like, well, I'm always going to be friends with these guys.
Yeah.
But, you know, when that band finished, two of the dudes like moved super close to where I live as well.
And you end up seeing each other a lot?
No.
Oh, you don't?
No.
Yeah.
You know, it's weird. Like I moved outside of London to kind of get away from it all.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And then a couple of the dudes moved there as well. And to the point where I can like walk around their houses in 10 minutes. Never see each other.
That's crazy.
I'll rarely
Isn't
speak.
Isn't it funny how that happens?
Yeah. But it doesn't, it's not like
intentional.
Yeah, and there's not hard feelings, and it's like, you know, as soon as any of us meet up again, it's like no time's passed.
It's like life happens. Yeah. Yeah, who knows? We all live in different states. So, I mean, our guitar player Kevin and myself are like best friends, and we do Party Smasher Studio together, and we live close to each other, and our girlfriends are friends, and so I'm sure that will, you know, continue. But he's not a long-time member of the band. He's kind of just on for this cycle.
Yeah.
So this is all new for him, and I'm just glad to be able to go through it with one of my best friends right now.
Yeah.
So it's a little different than the other guys who we've been through so much together and live in completely different places and have different lifestyles. So
yeah. But and you are so very different as well, and I think that's one of the reasons that it works within this band, definitely.
Yeah.
But like, what are you looking forward to cracking on with, aside from actually having a personal life, like on a creative level? Because, you know, obviously Party Smashers is this multi-platform thing, which, you know, if people don't know about, it's, you know, it's a label, it's a website, it's beyond that you know, you want it to be this network of creative people that stretches across the world, and so that rather than just being affiliated with it, people are working together on projects.
Absolutely.
Which I think is incredible. So what's going to happen with that?
Well, that's one of the reasons that I feel like this needs to have an ending point, because I've never been able to fully nurture all these other things that I feel passionate about because I leave, you know. So while I can do some of it from the road, and I can talk about it, and I do some of it, I really want to be able to put the same energy that I've put into Dillinger into some other things. So that's a big part of this as well.
Yeah. Do you think it will be gratifying, obviously, but in a different way. But how do you see it?
Well, for one thing, honestly, I've grown so much since One of Us is the Killer, that album, to now.
Yeah.
A whole new level of emotional intelligence, whole new level of like self-realization. And basically, since I've done that and worked on myself and all this stuff, I've been able to achieve everything I ever set my mind to, and it's really exciting. You know, I wanted to do the label thing, you know, I was working on it forever, trying to find the right partners with it. Knocked it out, got it done, very happy with it, going very well.
Because a lot of people, when hearing you talk about that, will probably think that you just meant within regards of like releasing records for yourself, but it's not that.
No.
Because you're looking at it, you know, you want to, in a very old-fashioned way, put out great art and help people that need that help.
Sure. And the idea was to be able to have resources to do albums that are meaningful and that will bring attention to the rest of the roster. So it's not just being able to put out a 7-inch of a friend, it's being able to put out a 7-inch of a friend, put out my own music, maybe put out a band that's much, much bigger, that, you know, doesn't like their scenario where they're at and wants more independence and wants to be part of a culture. So I'll need the resources to do that as well. So I really spent a lot of time, many years even, to find the right partners and people that can help support this idea. So we feel very happy. And Cooking Vinyl is the company that stepped up to help me do it in the way that I want to do it. They're like one of the biggest independent labels in the world, and they didn't have much of a presence in the U.S., so me and my projects for Party Smasher became kind of the first real things that we worked on together and in the United States as like a real, you know, launching point for the United States and what they were doing. So,
yeah
it's exciting. It's real exciting. And that's a big part of it. the media stuff. I'm doing some management and stuff like that. That's really starting to take up a lot of my time. So,
and what about like writing with other people as well? Because that's something that you've done, but and it is so beyond what you do in this, not beyond, but different from what you do in this world as well. Like people wouldn't expect you to be doing the stuff like you've done with Kimbra.
Yeah, that's her right now, blowing me up.
Right. Well, there you go. It's like,
yeah, I'm actually working with her on a management level now. So okay. It went from creative to actually like full on working on her next level of existence. You know, like taking her to the next level and trying to nurture what she started and try to make sure it's fully realized. We just connected artistically, and she needed people around her that could help guide her and navigate all the business and creativity in a way that she felt was representative of who she is. So that's been really interesting for me, coming from where I come from, you know?
Yeah, of course, because, you know, to come from a background that's so fiercely independent and creatively driven.
Yeah,
but you've got a smart business mind as well, clearly.
Well, it's
I think, you know, it'll stand you in good stead.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly am coming from a position of knowledge of how this all works, and dealing with like kind of major label people and all that stuff, and some of the things that come through my inbox, you know, with her are very different than with Dillinger or something like that.
Yeah.
So it's very interesting, but I find that like the way of handling it is no different, you know. Know what you're worth. Know what you're worth, meaning in both sense. Don't act like you're bigger than you are. Like, know when it's time to like say okay, and also but fight for what you're worth and what you mean, and treat people with respect, and be honorable, and just like be relentless, you know, about what you care about, and that's all it really takes.
like that's an easy thing.
Yeah.
When you're approaching, like, when you were writing with her and stuff, how was that, like, because it's such a different world?
Yeah.
Did you have a different approach to writing? Because I remember you telling me once when you did you did like a seminar thing for, was it for Reason or something? When you were telling me about when you were writing and you know, your approach to writing certain rhythms and patterns and stuff. Which you would write at a certain speed and then you would speed it right up, and then I remember you saying so that you were given this demonstration and you was like, so then I want to speed up to this point. Yeah. And people were like, yeah, but that's not actually going to be playable.
Yeah.
And then you were like, no, this is how it sounds when we recorded it as a band and stuff.
Uh-huh. Which,
so that is so different from writing in a pop sense,
right?
But in a pop sense, that often sounds like it could give the implication that it would be cheap, and I don't mean that.
Yeah. Well, look, I mean, the thing that's difficult about doing pop music or more marketable music or music that's not as extreme than people are used to hearing me do, is to do it in a way that's providing something different, but still like palatable. That's a challenge, you know.
Yeah.
That's a challenge to say, this doesn't have to be as dense as some music I do normally, or it doesn't have to be, you know, vocals are more important, hooks are more important, but how do you make something that sounds like it has your touch to it, but still appeal to that kind of an audience? And that's not easy, and that's something that she's been very good at, and even that Gautier track that people know her for, that like Somebody I Used to Know, whatever, that was a very untraditional single.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it sounded stingish and stuff like that, but it didn't have the same amount of choruses a normal song on the radio has. The chorus didn't come in at the time. A chorus usually comes in. You know, it didn't have a beat that was really tappable with your foot. It was very untraditional for a single, and it was one of the biggest songs in the last 5 years ever.
Yeah. Do you think
that in itself shows that there's room in this time period for that kind of creativity. And that last Beyonce record, I think, was a really creative album, and she opened a lot of doors for people like Kimbra, I think, to say, you know, some of those beats and things like that are very untraditional and cool and sloppy and saucy and greasy and like soulful and
of course,
you know. And
I think that
yeah
I think that level of artistry is coming through now, when you've got people that are really forging ahead, like you said, like, and like, I mean, look at the last Kendrick album.
Exactly.
Like, what an incredible piece of work, where it's just like so dense.
Yeah.
So
musical.
Yeah.
The musicianship, the people he had on that album, the band, like, yeah, that Kendrick Lamar record opened up some doors for sure. And, amazing. Yeah. And Kimber's worked with a lot of those guys that were, he's worked with on those albums, and she's worked with Bilal, that R&B singer that people know a lot, and she works at the Roots constantly, and she's going out to Minneapolis to do this whole Prince thing with the Revolution.
Wow.
So she's singing songs with the Revolution, Prince songs at the club where they filmed Purple Rain.
Wow.
So she's in a circle that's certainly, it's an interesting place where she's at, and it's really up my wheelhouse for sure, because it's credible, but it also opens up new doors.
Yeah. And how are you finding moving in that world?
It's difficult in one respect, because my job is to kind of like just answer email and deal with every, you know, like, I'm used to being completely meticulous about my music and being like every detail. Now I'm with somebody who's so meticulous about everything they do, and I have to be the guy who says sometimes, stop being meticulous. We got to get this going. We got to move forward with this. You know, like, you're going too far. You can't change that. This is not how it works. It's got to go, and we got to make Warner happy. If they don't support it, we have no album. Mm. You know, so it's this interesting balance for me.
All right, cool. I think
I just see a breast in a window, so
all right, I think that may well be us wrapping it up.
Yeah,
all right, man, thank you for
thank
that
you. I think that was a lot.
Thank you for listening to Swim Podcast episode number 15. I hope you enjoyed it. At times these can sometimes feel a little bit like therapy, which I think is one of the reasons I enjoy doing them. I hope you enjoyed it too. Remember to subscribe. Remember also that you could leave us a 5-star review and a nice little message on iTunes, and that would be awesome and much appreciated. Next episode is going to be with Ross Robinson, which I did when I was in Los Angeles recently. Those of you that aren't aware, Ross is a record producer who's made some truly incredible records that have helped define the genre of heavy music. So it's a really good one, actually. And you'll hear next episode.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Ross Robinson. Thanks for listening. I'm out. Peace.